Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Greetings, friends.
Holding down the fort because everyone else has gone home for Christmas. Now it's only the three of us. We'll also be joining you on Christmas Day, so come back then as well. But for now, we're going to shake things up and talk about all things horror-related. Because we occasionally keep talking about horror games and stuff in the office, and we thought, well, why not dedicate a podcast to the very idea of horror in games, kind of the history of it, and how effective the the gaming as a medium is at conveying horror. Because Ash comes down on the side of film is better than gaming,
yes.
Or at least you're passing that out, and I'm going to support the fact that gaming is better. Rach is kind of in the middle.
I'm definitely more for gaming, but I do love horror films as well.
Okay, so let's start out with our earliest horror memories in gaming. Mine is the archetypal Resident Evil door through the window.
Yeah.
Because that was the first time that I grabbed a friend and screamed. But how about you guys?
I didn't prepare. I never had Resident Evil.
Okay.
My first.
What's your gut reaction to a scary thing for young Rach?
It would probably be playing Majora's Mask. And that's not even a horror game.
I would totally back that, though. That moon is terrifying.
Scary.
The general tone is terrifying in that thing.
I can't remember the name now. It was like this, I think it was Rome or 300 or something on the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
I think it was 300. And you go and find all those people like stapled to a tree. And that absolutely. Oh, I hated it. It was so scary.
Do you mean the PSP, the movie tie-in game?
Yeah, it was like,
That PS2. Was on PSP?
No, it was PS2.
Okay.
It was a PS2 game.
Yeah, I had the PSP on, but either way.
There was a PS2 game.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it was the 300 one, and there's that tree of people, and they're all stapled to it, and it screwed me up so much. And all the violence and gore in it. I was a young, impressionable, and sensitive child, and that game really got me.
Was it just the sheer visuals of it for both of you? Was it just like the general look of it going like, well, that's not something I've seen before, and that's kind of why it worked?
Definitely being a young girl playing Majora's Mask, it was the impending sense of dread.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the scariest bit. It's not knowing what's going to happen, which I think is the basis of horror, is mystery. And it's like, what happens when this time runs out? And then, like, it's almost like finding out isn't as scary as worrying about what it's going to be, right?
So this is a perfect segue into the...
Sorry.
No, this is perfect. This is the pros and cons of what if different mediums bring to horror in general. Because I think one of the biggest... For me, if I was going to support the Majora's Mask side of it, I love, like, the tone of that game is creepy and weird and macabre. And, like, that's... Because you're living in it. You have agency within that world. And that's what draws you into it more. And so my opening gambit would be, in terms of why gaming does horror better, is that you always have agency in that world. It's always... Yeah. You're the one pushing the creaky door open. You're the one that's stuck in the dark room with the thing. And you're the one that has to, like, you know, deal with whatever it is. And so that is, for me, that's unbeatable. But that's, like, you know, in terms of, like, cinematography and how those scenes come together, film can do those things way more.
Inherently to horror and fear itself, the whole point of horror and fear as two separate things, but also as two things together, is the unknown. Gaming cannot play on the unknown as well as film can because of the lack of permadeath, which is something gone through in Joseph Anderson's video essay very well.
Do love Joseph Anderson as well. Quick shout out.
He's done a fantastic video on that, and I agree with it in that when you first play a game, inherently scarier than a film because of the immersion within a game and all the different things, all the atmosphere it can build you in, you're right in there at the heart of all the things that are actually scary. As soon as you die, as soon as something bad happens, as soon as you see the monster and what you're up against, that is void, and then it becomes an exercise in a thriller game or an exciting sort of spin on a normal action or suspense game that isn't inherently scary, that doesn't give you fear. in the same way as a horror film
immediately
would.
All I can think of here is Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
Yes.
Immediately. That is so true of that game, because you don't actually see any baddies, mm-hmm. per se, until about 2 hours into the game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you are on edge the entire time.
Yeah. See, I was going to say, because that's very true. Like, it's very hard for a game, because you fundamentally couldn't have permadeath permanently but a lot of games have tackled that idea. I mean, obviously Souls kind of plays off that quite a lot in terms of, I'm not in a horror sense, but games
Souls
have started.
Is very not permadeath.
Using death as a mechanic, I mean. I was going to mention Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem or whatever, ways of doing enemies that don't need to kill you, but it's still the horror, like the effect of it, because your character's slowly going insane.
Fourth wall breaking.
And the more you see enemies, like the more you expose yourself to them, the more your character goes crazy, the harder it is to play, and the more you get visual hallucinations on screen.
That is a really good way of going around the unknown factor, where if you do see them, then you lose your mind or mm-hmm. whatever within these games. Sanity meters are a really good way of doing it. I definitely
agree. Isn't
with that.
Living with the horror more scary?
Oh, it is!
Like living with Ash Millman, sorry.
No, the one thing I will say about Dark Souls as well, it is a horror game. There is scary part. Well, it's not like a horror game, but it is a game with horror visuals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
very
eldritch, Lovecraftian sort of like.
More so, I would say Bloodborne.
Bloodborne. I guess that's my main experience these days, Soulsborne stuff. But I think that also has a very good way of getting around the death thing by having it as you are dead and you come back and you go to the bonfires.
It's a way of life.
Mm. Yeah. And then you going through it is inherent to that game. But then again, we've also just said it isn't a horror.
No,
game.
If we stick to specific horrors, that's a really good point, though, because the finality of death that we get in cinema, characters do die off and then they're done. Like, that is just way harder to do on a medium-based level.
Didn't Hellblade... Senua's Sacrifice have a permadeath initially.
It advertised itself as having that, but then people tested it and it wasn't true. But that still worked the first time through. I don't know if you guys have you guys played Hellblade?
Not yet.
Okay, that thing is all about the idea of Senua herself succumbing to psychosis and she kind of gets lost in her own mind, and that's pretty much what all the different levels are, the permutations of her worry about what happened to her tribe. But the way that they do that, they advertise the fact that, hey, there's a permadeath mode in this. If you completely lose yourself, because basically when you die, quote unquote, in that game, she just loses herself more to the darkness. She doesn't really die. Mm. And so in that game, they said, hey, if this goes all the way, then you'll be done, the game will be over. So they tried to do the thing that you're getting to, but I don't know who eventually pushed back against that on the creative side, but it's not in the game. If you there is no way to have permanent death. I'd be really curious if a developer ever did do that, because I remember Hideo Kojima talking about that in, I think it was the production stuff for Metal Gear Solid 2, where he initially had this whole idea that if you died, your save would be deleted and the disc would burn and it would all fall apart.
What?
And because it's Kojima.
That's
and
it scary.
Was, yeah, well, he had this whole thing where he was like, I want to reinforce the idea that life matters in this game, and if you don't get through, then your copy is burned forever. Yeah. And obviously, people in charge of the marketing were like, that's terrible. But
that disc.
But yeah, but there's ways to do it. I'm sure there's other indie developers, and people can let us know and stuff, however they get in touch with us, that I'm sure there are different indie horrors that have played with that idea, that have deleted your save and things like that.
I think deleting the save maybe is a step too far.
That's your answer to permadeath, though.
My answer to permadeath is, well, yeah, technically, yeah. But you get it in Roguelike and Binding of Isaac and Binding of Isaac and all that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, the way video games handle the permadeath mechanic is it actually encourages you to try again. It encourages you to keep trying rather than actually it being a finite ending a film would have.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the craft itself, because we're all film nerds. More game nerds-ish, but also film nerds. And so growing up with horror film, and I did a couple of years studying horror just at A level, it's nothing fancy.
Aww.
Yes, film studies all the way, proto high school. And so when you sort of start applying these weird academic ways of breaking down film, I always find that horror is the most predictable genre. And so let me finish the whole thing. Because recently we've got a lot of innovative horrors like Hereditary or Quiet Place, and we've seen different, in Get Out as well, which I adore. But for the vast majority, you talk about mainstream horrors or the ones that draw the biggest crowds.
The cliches.
Yeah,
the
from something like It or The Return of Halloween.
My jimmies are rustled right now.
That's fine. You rustle all you want. And so for me, that whole genre feels incredibly predictable, because I always know the volume spike jump scare is coming, and I always know the way that it's going to go. Nearly a lot of the same camera angles get reused. It's very rare that you get an in-camera jump scare, which which is why Hereditary, for me, worked so much better, and same with Get Out.
What a film.
The very concept of Get Out was horrifying and brilliant and kind of genius. And so if we're going to talk about what the different mediums bring to the craft of horror, then for me, film has become almost entirely predictable, whereas that's not the case in gaming.
Ooh, I think you're I think you're watching the wrong films, Scott.
Yeah, I watch all the films.
I see your A-level film studies. I've raised it a degree. There we go. No, but I think with horror, there is a foundation of the genre, mainstream horror, trash, binge, popcorn movie horror that is built on tropes, cliches, conventions, because you know what you get from a horror film.
And almost that's, humor.
Mm, that's the whole point of genres, is you know what you're going to get. Horror, in comparison to every other genre out there, is the most experimental and exciting of sort of films you can watch. Like, they're the sort of films that champion found footage and play with different expectations and representations. And if you look at something like Mandy, where it's all everyone losing their mind and it's all neon colours.
I hated Mandy.
You might hate Mandy, but it's experimentation at its finest. And it's very... It's a visceral, primal thing that it taps into. I'm very passionate about horror.
That's
very passionate about film as well.
You should be.
But like, I think that it's an absolute sweeping statement to say that horror as a whole, as a film, is predictable.
I find that. So I think like you're obviously correct. Like obviously there's, but the thing is that the things that those movies are experimenting with, something like Mandy, like its color palettes are very experimental. Yeah. It's very psychedelic. I wouldn't really class Mandy as a horror, although its tone
it's
can be horrifying.
Psychological horror.
Would you call Get Out a horror?
But for the sake of like talking about the, but that's the thing. If we're gonna champion films like horror films as doing something like bringing you in, establishing a tone, establishing an atmosphere, I think games do that so much better because of the fact that you're literally the one in there. Mm. Like if Mandy was a playable game, then you'd be lost in that world if it was in VR or something.
Yeah.
Then, so my argument would be that you can take everything film can do and make it controllable, and that's better.
And that is right. That is right.
Thank you.
Great.
I was going to segue. Scott mentioned VR.
Yes.
In my opinion, best horror game of the generation.
Ooh.
Resident Evil 7 VR.
Ooh. Good shout, because it's literally you exploring the house
house. Yeah, exactly. Not only is it literally you as a person controlling you, it's you. You're in there. That is terrifying. The thing is with Resi 7 as well is, like, obviously it's... I feel like it's got a lot of, obviously, predictable jump scares, but it has a lot of things that did surprise me as well. Like, for example, if you've played it, when Jack comes through the wall, mostly because I think he teleports and it's unfair, but, like, but that kind of thing where it's, like, it's not predictable, and I think predictability is... like being unpredictable is what makes a game scary.
Yeah.
I think Resident Evil, for a prime example, when it first came out, innovative because you had like the dog jump scare.
But then
all those things become inherent to its own genre and its functions, and then you could argue that it is predictable because you know you're going to get those jump scares. You know what sort of tone you're going to get.
Okay.
So, but like that's a formation of the genre. That doesn't mean it stops it from being experimentational. Mm-hmm. Experimentational, as you have
that's a good word.
As you have rightly pointed out.
Yes.
And what I say, it is right. It is right when you're at the center of these games or at the center of exploring all these different facets of horror that you are then completely immersed in, and you are the character. But as soon as you enter a game and become this person and have this really heightened sense of horror, as soon as you die, that all goes away because you're experiencing it again to get to the same point. Like playing Outlast, for example, it's very scary, it's very first person, it's very intense. William, whatever his name is, big old Willy, comes and boshes you on, you're like, well, okay, yeah, whatever.
Do you know, but see, that's interesting because I felt that in Amnesia Machine for Pigs.
Yeah, you talk about the pig boy a lot.
Yeah, because that was such a great setup, and like the pig in that I thought was terrifying.
Oh,
this idea
felt
of like
so flat.
Yeah, when you see it, it's terrible. But the setup of this like half human, half pig breed thing, and you don't know what it is, and you're reading all these notes from this different scientists and investigatory like bodies that have looked into this phenomenon, and you're there walking through the cobbled streets and like, am I gonna find it?
The unknown.
Yeah, bumps in the night, and you see a door shaking. It's like something's on the other side of that door. When you finally come across the pig thing, it looks terrible and it animates terribly, and that game just fell the hell apart for me. But I think that there's something like that factors into horror as well, which is the challenge of overcoming something. And so just because you died, like it is true that sometimes multiple, like because it's like takes in a movie. Sometimes I feel that in like some big set piece games where it's like Uncharted, I messed up the set piece. I'm like, okay, I just messed up the take. Can we go again?
Yeah.
And like it just feels like I messed up the thing that I was supposed to be doing. But I think that challenge or that like formidable opponent can itself be scary. And just because you die, it went because you die to it, it's like, oh God, it's going to get me again. And that's a thing.
I think, I do totally agree with gaming being scary and immersive as a thing. And I agree that film is as well for me. Film is just that step above because you get the unknown the whole way through. Like, yes, predictability also in games. Mm-hmm. But as a in general, when you watch a film, you don't know what's going to happen. That's why you're watching.
No, it's all right.
Because you're invested in a story and a narrative. And it is the story and the narrative of games that makes them... that makes them horror games. Mm-hmm, that's the mm-hmm. exciting part. And with films, you get that distilled to an impressive, crafted, unpredictable, unknown thing, mm-hmm. which is what makes it scary. And then you look at other games and you know what's going to happen if you keep dying and you have to keep doing these things. That's the main sticking point for me. Mm-hmm. But then I also...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Keep on talking. I also... want to draw attention to games like The Evil Within and Silent Hill.
Yeah, I was going to mention Evil Within too.
Because they are fantastic, fantastic psychological representations of what horror can be in mishmash bodies and violent sort of expositions and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's they're perfect sort of horror games from their psychological in-depth dive. And you get that level of weirdness in games that maybe you don't always see in films. But then you don't get a lot of games like Silent Hill and Evil Within.
I think to quickly speak to Evil Within, because that game's obviously, you know, it came from Shinji Mikami, and he just carried forward that idea that Resident Evil in the later games was like, hey, there's this big mutated thing and it's got an eye on its shoulder and isn't that scary? And it was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. But the Evil Within 2 did open world horror, which we'd never seen, which I love.
I love how different Evil Within and Evil Within 2 are. Because they're both, like, someone asked me when I was playing through the second one, like, is this better than the first one? And I couldn't really answer that that question.
I would say it is.
They're both different. They're both so different. Like, one, I want to say, is almost more like a film in that a film has a controlled environment where there are specific cues where it will, you know, scare you or this will happen. Whereas two, there were whole areas that I missed out that had big scares in them that I missed. But at the same time, I made my own story. I made my own horror story into. I just think it's amazing how different they are. They're that's such perfect. Good games.
But I kind of think that's it. Like, that was one of the things where, if we're talking about predictability and innovation within horror, something like The Evil Within 2 basically gives you this massive play space, which is kind of Silent Hill inspired ish. You've got a big old town that you're moving through, but it's very dank and dark and misty. And it's you're immediately like, I'm in a horror game. Yeah. But the way that they set their jump scares up or the way that they set up their set pieces are just they're inside different houses that you may or may not go into. So the atmosphere itself is quite scary, but then you have that weird thing of like I'm exploring and I came across something and all of a sudden I'm trapped here and I can't get out, and then you experience like a set piece scare, but the sheer fact that you're finding them in an open world environment, I guess I would say it plays into my side of the whole agency being more rewarding kind of thing, but I mean it depends like how it's done, I guess, because I don't know, I mean, would you say like in terms of recent horror films that most of the ones that you see recently do seem to do things that you haven't seen before?
I think this year has been a definite year of innovation again with Hereditary. Games like Revenge that completely
Swept it all away, mate.
Completely sweep the change. I'm trying to say change, but I keep saying sweep. Sweep! They completely change the point of view from... there's a whole thing in film called the male gaze, which is how shots are set up and how you're inherently put in a masculine point of view to watch things, which is a load of gender politics, which we don't need to go into right now. But Revenge is a horror film that's a like assault revenge sort of film and then flips it from the female point of view and it's all how a woman would look at things and its male bodies and all this sort of thing instead, which I think is really, really interesting.
The idea of gendered cinematography is so fascinating. But that's a way wider conversation.
It's really good. It's really worth watching. And films like Possum, which is a art house horror film about a man with a puppet. and the puppet is this...
Not the Mel Gibson one. Because he did a movie called like Beaver, and it's like him with a puppet. Carry on.
But like it's got this doll's head, like this screaming doll's head attached to eight spiders' legs. It's horrible.
And the that thing that Sid makes in Toy Story.
Yeah. Oh my god, it is. It's literally that. But it's disgusting. Like this thing and the whole thing.
Oh, I know what it is. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The whole thing. Josh sent us the poster.
Yeah.
It is a completely about feeling. You don't know what's going on for most of the film, which is art house film anyway. You don't know what's going on at any given point. But the feeling that that evokes and just watching like weird scenes of the seaside play out and him look very upset whilst holding his leather bag, that's what you're supposed to draw emotion from, which is getting sidetracked from the point of gaming and films. But they're just
It's relevant.
Yeah, not necessarily because it's the whole passive versus active participant thing. Like is horror fundamentally scarier when you're subjected to it and you can't do anything about it? Or you're the one who can affect it, you can turn around and run the other way.
Easier in games, I think, to almost take yourself out of it, which is interesting, because if you have a scary part, like in, for example, Amnesia, you could just like lock yourself in a wardrobe or pause it. you can pause it.
Not now.
Also, like I've seen playthroughs where someone's playing a scary game like Outlast and they're just making their character jump. Over and over again, and it takes me out of it. And I'm like, how are you finding this like so not scary that you're? So you have that option if you're getting a little bit too scared, you can sort of almost take yourself out of it.
That's one of
breaks horror conventions. I mean,
there's so much in this.
That was one of the biggest things. That was one of the biggest annoying things back in 2013 when Roger Ebert said the games couldn't be art because the player fundamentally authors their experience and that they can break certain things and change certain things. And I did a whole dissertation on this because it's not true. Like, yes, you can author your own experiences, but you're within specific confines. Like the coders have still made that game in a certain way. You can't my example was you can't make Nathan Drake fly just because you want to. Like, you know, you still have to live by the rules that they've coded. People can mess around.
I would absolutely say something like PT was a work of art. Like that was amazing.
And for the sake of having a little bit of a left turn, you wanted to talk about moments in games that you found scary that weren't supposed to be scary. Is there any particular examples you want
to
throw
in? This fascinates me. Totally. So I guess I started with Majora's Mask. Like that's a Nintendo game. That's a Zelda game.
It's very Gaiden. It's very side story.
Right, so I haven't prepared. So scary moments in games that I mean, I found playing Oblivion in first person scary.
Really can be the Daedric Plains and all that sort of thing. That got me as well.
I'm scared of everything though, guys. Like honestly,
so I would throw in Arkham Knight. There's a bit where the man bat first appears.
This is the thing that I have to bring to this when we point out these specific scary moments. I'm right in the microphone. When we point out these specific scary moments in games, they are borrowing from film to make them scary. And you're talking about a cutscene, which is inherently a film thing.
That's gameplay, but yeah.
It's a film thing. Yeah. I'm thinking of the thing where he's like the gargoyle on top of the...
He just appears.
You're just going through the city and you go up one of the ledges, then he's there right on the top. Yeah. But that's not inherently a bad thing, though. I mean,
No, but it points out my point of film being a passive and frightening experience because of it, whereas it's not the immersiveness of the game that is... so much scaring you there. It is watching it play out and having no control over it.
See, I would posit that it's the fact that you think it's just another grapple, it's just another way that I'm traversing this world, and it gets completely juxtaposed against the fact that, hey, there's a massive enemy right in your face with wings and fangs right there. It's that sheer juxtaposition that makes that work. But yeah, it has to borrow from film in terms of taking control away from you and making it a passive experience. Yeah. Oh God, are we both right?
This is the thing. This
that is
completely the thing. I completely agree that horror games are terrifying and impressive and innovative and experimental and wonderful things to play. And I agree that film is very much the same, and they're two different ways of experiencing horror. The personal one that gets me more is film, and the personal one that gets you more is games. So yes, I would say we are both right.
It definitely depends on the person, because like it or not, to experience a horror game, it's effort. You have to put in effort. So if you're the type of person who, like my fiance, who likes to just sort of sit and watch a film and take it in, rather than, you know, actually having to play a game and move his hands.
Yeah, I guess that's always a thing in gaming.
So there are going to be people who agree with you more and who agree with Scott more.
Yeah. What a horrible world we live in. Good Lord.
I think essentially on a gaming channel, it's going to lean towards this as well, because you're going to have a wider experience of games and that sort of thing. I think my experience of horror and life in general comes from films, because I've just invested too much time.
I think like many things, it's a mix of the two, and like the juxtaposition is inherently baked in letting you have to put up with some things. If you were fully in control of every element that was on screen, it wouldn't be scary, which is your fundamental thing with why horror games get less and less scary the more that you learn how to master them. So I think we're both kind of right. Do you have any examples you want to throw in of a moment that you found scary that wasn't supposed to be scary?
I probably do have lots. I think the 300 one is my perfect one.
That works pretty well.
I'm like Rach, I'm scared of everything. Like honestly, most games I've played, there's been a moment where I'm like, oh no, thank you.
But I'm scared right now.
I'm going to segue from this one just to bring up what I think is the perfect amalgamation of film and gaming in one, which is the ultimate end goal of this conversation, because it does everything right.
Okay.
Is it though? It's
Until Dawn. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That lets you have agency throughout the story, but then you also have a very cinematically focused game overall. I adore Until Dawn. I think so I had it at like number 3 or 4 in the overall PS4 ranking. Yep. That thing
very good.
Nigh on a masterpiece.
Very cheesy. Very it's good. Full of cliches. Yeah. Very, oh my God.
Very like, teen horror, but it knows what it is.
What were even the jump scares in that game? Like, you go through a door and a witch comes out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and
I'm just
like,
perfect.
Why but, is there a witch?
There's the whole thing as well, where like you have to hold the controller to not move in the when you're trying to hide.
Nice. Scary.
Yeah. Genius
I
idea.
Every time.
I had to put the controller on the table and hold it because it vibrates and it moves. Yeah, I had to hold it still.
My favorite part of that game, which actually undermines a piece of my argument entirely, is when you literally play a Saw film, which is when he's making the decision as to who you're going to kill or who you're going to cut or whatever with the rotary saw. Mm-hmm. Because the thing with these sort of films and torture porn films and horror is what would you do in that situation is definitely a question of that. And how would you handle it and could you survive? Whereas Until Dawn posits that question of film, makes a film about it, but also lets you see if you could survive without making it too much of a...
And I think regardless of what you do, it plays into the overall story anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't... Yeah. My gripe about Until Dawn is it's brilliant, but it doesn't have enough possibilities. Mm. It's all very much the same. Mm. The story will play out the exact same. It's just a matter of who survives at the end. end.
Yeah.
For example, there's a sequence with Mike who is going through an asylum. Mm. Mm-hmm. If you fail every single quick time event, he still escapes. He's fine. Your dog dies. I think which by is the time,
because the whole thing with Until Dawn is that the whole cast can't survive if you do it well or whatever. Well, but they don't. They still don't play into the actual main thrust of the narrative, which is the stuff that happens with Mike and the Wendigos and everything. Mm. Spoilers. But
the supernatural events. Sort of, what part of it is?
I more was to being it than
spoiler
that.
Free.
One of the coolest things in Until Dawn, though, at some point we will wrap this podcast up. But one of the coolest things in Until Dawn is you have flash forwards to when you're basically it's still in first person, but you're talking to Peter Stormare's character, and he's basically
not a flash forward.
Well, that's the thing, and so you kind of have these cutaway scenes where you're doing these like psychiatrist conversations with this guy, and he just asks you lots of questions, and it's very much in the vein of Silent Hill. I think it was Downpour on the Wii.
Like, what are you more scared of?
What are you scared of? Yeah. and then that infiltrates different parts of the game. Like there's one bit where he asks you, what are you more scared of? And it's like rats, spiders, something. Yeah, and if you say spiders, then a spider appears like later on in the game, just comes at you. Yeah. And
it's like, oh god. Rats, so I was like, I'm not having a spider. Well, I'm gonna click rats.
Like. Yeah, I was like, I know what it's gonna do. It's gonna throw one of these at me. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna pick something that isn't actually terrifying. Yeah. But yeah, Until Dawn has got some great ideas in, but they're a mix.
I think I love Until Dawn so much because it is the film experience putting yourself in, but it's an authored narrative filmic experience that's tailored to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what gaming tries to do, and that's why some horror games hit and some horror games miss, is because it's trying to appeal to a mass audience whilst also a single audience at the same time, whereas Until Dawn says, okay, what are you scared of? What do you think about this? What do you want to do? And appeal straight to your own horror-centric nature. Like, I think that's the way horror gaming should go to actually come out on top against film for me personally.
I will run down just quickly some games that are coming out in 2019, because it seems like next, because when I was googling horrors for this year, there's not that many. Call of Cthulhu and like just kind of like a just small handful. And for 2019 though, we're opening up with the Resident Evil 2 remake. There's Days Gone. There's Last of Us 2. Yeah. World War Z's games coming out. Dying Light 2 and Layers of Fear 2.
Yeah. So Layers of Fear 2, right? That last one. I didn't even know that was coming until we were obviously looking up for this podcast, and I'm like, oh, I'm so hyped for that game. That is one of the scariest games I've ever played.
I did not like Layers of Fear.
You didn't like it?
I did not find it scary. I found it trite.
I'm very much like a cat who has just turned around and saw a cucumber behind it. If I see one thing, turn around and I go back and there's a different thing, oh my goodness,
to be
the
completely
game's
honest,
full of it.
If you distill horror down into one image, it is a cat freaking out at a gherkin.
It's me. Yeah.
So,
that is what it is.
It's me with a cucumber.
No, 100% respect that it is. Again, that plays on the proper fear of the unknown, because you don't know what's coming. And that, again, the whole point of horror, the whole point of fear, which are two separate things again, but also the same thing, is the unknown. If you want to be scared by something, you've got to not know what it is. If you want to experience horror, then it's got to play on unpredictability.
So you should go out there and find your own gherkins. Be the cat and find the gherkin. It's the crux of all good things. Go on.
Be the cat that we need you.
Be the cat, the change in the world.
Be the gherkin in the
world.
But
also, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. Let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're on YouTube, or find us on social media. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ash.
Hello and goodbye.
And John by Rage.
Thanks for watching.
I'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.